Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast, the podcast that does still exist, at least in some form. Apologies to our listeners who have been waiting anxiously for the next episode. I assume by now you've all moved on, but hopefully Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever it is you listen on will notify you that this episode is there. I guess if you're listening to this by now, that's already happened. This is Chad Young. I'm joined by people. I apologize. Summer's gotten away from both of us. There have been some personal stuff going on, some just general busyness happening. We've not been on these airwaves for a while, Pete.
Yeah, it's been a while. It has been a busy summer. You know, similar to last summer, it feels like our vacations don't, like, it'd be great if somehow you and I took vacations at the exact same time, but that's right. Never the case. Like, we thought about coming back, but then it was like Chad was on vacation and then I went on a 10-day vacation. But bottom line, we're back. And you know what? You say this all the time, Chad. We're a Keeper League podcast, and the most important time for Keeper Leagues is the trade deadline in the offseason. So here we are to save your seasons or future seasons or ruin them. We'll see. But glad to be back.
Yeah, and I got to be honest. I spent basically a month doing my work at FanGraphs and editing stuff. But other than that, not paying attention to baseball because the World Cup was on. And I was just fully engrossed in the World Cup to the point that Niv Shah, the Auto New creator, and messaged me one day and was like, dude, I was so excited about how well my team was doing in League One. It's a 4x4 league. And he's like, I made up like 7 points in the last 30 days. And I was super excited until I sorted by points in the last 30 days. And your team has made up 24 points. And I was like, my team made up 20. So is my team doing well in that league? He's like, have you not been paying attention? I was like, I set my lineups every day. I go in every day. I look at my stats for the day and I set my lineups, but I haven't been making transactions much. I haven't really been looking at standings. I've just been like, try to get my best guys in there and see what's what. And yeah, my team made a huge run in that league. It's in third right now. And it's, I was laughing. It's like that team, I worked really hard in the offseason to try to rebuild my offense. And I made two trades to acquire first round talents, right? To anchor that offense. And I got Kyle Tucker and Gunnar Henderson.
Those are my two big offs. God.
And the fact that team is in third place with that being my big offseason acquisitions.
Should have acquired Vlad too and went for the Holy Trinity.
I know. But luckily, I did need a first baseman and I acquired Wilson Contreras.
Hell yeah.
We talked about him in baseball. The offseason, right? And we talked about him. We talked about the fact that, like, this is Fenway's going to be a good fit for him. Like, this is he seemed like an easy target for me. Now, to be fair, I also had Vinny Pascantino, who I just cut in that league, actually. And I picked up Spencer Horowitz at one point. So, like, but yeah, I mean, that was the one offseason pickup that worked for me. And now that team, like, I did really well with my cheap pickups. I took a flyer early in the season on Curtis Mead. I picked up Josh Young for a buck at one point. I have a $1 Trevor Larnach. I have a $1 Esmerlin Valdez. But like with injuries and trades I've made, because like I traded away Max Muncy, the elder, because the elder. My Josh Young was doing so well. And then Young got hurt. And now I am... Yeah, I have been for the last couple weeks as I try to make some trades, and this is going to transition us into our topic in a moment. But as I try to make some trades and try to figure things out, right now my middle infield and third base situation at league is Brett Beatty, Colson Montgomery, Nick Lofton, Christian Encarnacion Strand, and Geraldo Perdomo, along with Gunnar Henderson. Those are the guys I can mix and match at second, third, short, and middle infield. I really, really wish I had Muncy back. I really would like Young to get healthy. I also have Jordan Lawler on the IL on that team. Maybe he'll come back and help. Mead, I think, is probably not doing anything for me. It's a bit of a mess. But that does bring me to our topic for today, which is that, you know, trade deadlines are coming up. Obviously, the real trade deadline, we're recording this on Sunday. The real trade deadline is tomorrow, but fantasy trade deadlines are coming up as well. And this is it. This is time to, as you said, right, most important part of the season for your keeper leagues and figuring out how you're going to either put your team over the top or get ready to get there next year, I guess. And I am trying to figure out what to do in this league to get myself where I want to be. And to give you some context, I'm on 76 points in this league. Second place has 82 points. First place has 86. The fourth place team has 62. And the fifth place team has 56. And we pay out the top four spots. So I have a huge buffer on holding top three and an even bigger buffer on getting into the money. So that part's good. But I would very much like to chase down the teams ahead of me, or at least one of them. And I am like 7 runs back from a point. I am 3 home runs back from 1 point and 7 home runs back from 2 points. I am in a very tight race in OBP, although more likely to lose than gain there. I am in a very tight race for slugging, although again, more likely to lose than gain. My pitching is fine, but there's not a ton of room to gain there, but I could use some improvement. So I have room just sort of across the board to make improvements. And as I mentioned with my offense, my infield is a mess, right? Wilson Contreras doing well, but the rest of it's a mess. My outfield, however, my cheap outfielders are Trevor Larnach, Esmerlin Valdez, Chase DeLauder, JJ Bleday, Carson Benj. And then I've got my double-digit plus outfielders are Brian Reynolds, Wyatt Langford, and Kyle Stowers, who's been really good since he came back. I should get Spencer Horwitz back at some point. I should get Young and Lawler back. Like, I should have some guys helping. Oh, I also have Carrig. I forgot that I had him for $3. So I've got plenty of outfield depth. I do not have enough infield, and I could use some pitching upgrades. What I don't have are a ton of prospects to trade. I've got Leo DeVries, and I will shop him. I will move him for an upgrade if I can get one. And that's kind of it. On the pitching side, I have a number of sort of youngish, cheapish, Cade Cavalli, Justin Robleski, Parker Messick, although I'm really not inclined to trade him, Joey Cantillo, Emerson Hancock, Walbert Urena, Jake Bennett. Like, I've got some pitching I could theoretically trade. But the guy I've been trying to figure out what to do with is JJ Bleday. And I mentioned Bleday in part because in a different league, in this league, I have been trying to trade him. I've made a couple of offers. I actually acquired Bleday about a month ago, almost exactly a month ago, on July 5th, at a point at which I needed outfield because my outfield was banged up and my infield looked good. And I traded a $20 Max Muncy for a $5 JJ Bleday. And I was like, Bleday is obviously a lot younger than Muncy, but he, you know, he's not super young, but he's only 28, relatively young. For as far as we talk about this all the time for keeper leagues, 28 means that he's good for another 2-3 years. Like, that's all I'm looking at anyways. He's in a great park to hit. He might get traded, which is a little bit risky, but his season, like, his K rate is down to not necessarily a career low, but much lower than it's been for most of his career. His walk rate is up, which is great. Obviously, his performance overall is up. His home run per fly ball rate is up. He's got an increased MAC TV from last year. It's not quite a career high, but he does have a career high hard hit rate, a career high barrel rate, and a career high xWOBA. He went through a little bit of a slow stretch, but he's been good again recently. But I have the outfield depth, and I'm trying to figure out what I reasonably think I can get for JJ Bleday. And as I mentioned, I had already traded Muncy to get him, and now I need infielders. And so I offered him up straight up for a $20 Kazuma Okamoto in this 4x4 league. And that was 4 or 5 days ago. I didn't hear back. I just canceled that trade. I also have put him on in a package with $5 Emerson Hancock and $6 Leo DeVries for a $29 Ellie De La Cruz. That didn't go anywhere. I have him in a trade as part of a package for Fernando Tatis Jr., who is $48. Just looking for anybody who can help me on the infield. And I'm not getting bites. And I am wondering, am I overvaluing Blade? He looks to me like a, like he's got real prospect pedigree. It looks like it's coming together for him. He's in his age 28 season. He looks like to me like a guy who for the next couple of years is a pretty reliable outfield option, a guy you could start every day at a low price. And it doesn't seem like I'm getting trade value on him that way. Is it me? Is it them? What do you think?
Well, first, like general speak without getting too specific on JJ Blade, this is the kind of player that like, if you roster him, you're like, man, I really like this guy. I think he's got a lot of value. Like you see the glass half full. People trading for him, or players like this, I should say, tend to see the glass half empty of like, yeah, I'm buying high on a guy who, you know, is a career sub 200 hitter against lefties, is, you know, a busted prospect. Like, what are the odds that this is all kind of panned out? I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I don't think this is some monster breakout for JJ Blade, but yeah. I do think he's improved. I think going to Cincinnati, you know, we probably anticipated, I'm not going to say I did anticipate because I didn't put a lot of thought into JJ Blade going into the season, but I think if right. I was to provide some analysis on JJ Blade, I'd assume like, okay, well, he's probably going to be a strong side platoon who'll probably hit for at least power against righties, and he'll probably perform well at home. And if you look at his numbers on the season, his WRC plus against righties is 122. If you look at his WRC plus against righties at home, so like the perfect scenario, he gets to play at yeah. home in Great American and against righties, it's 154. A 154 WRC plus would rank fifth in baseball, tied with James Wood, only behind Alvarez, Contreras, Soto, and Rice. So like for a pretty important portion of his season, when he's facing righties, which are more common than lefties, at home, which are half of his games, he's one of the best hitters in baseball. Like that's indisputable based on the numbers so far this season. And I don't necessarily expect that to drastically fall off, although we do see the 67 WRC plus in the second half so far. You know, you acknowledge that. You said he's gotten a little bit colder, but he's starting to pick things up again. I'm certainly raising my eyebrows at any, you know, prolonged slump here for JJ Blade because of how his career has gone.
Sure.
With, you know, all of that said, unless he is traded, and you brought up that possibility, he is not right. a platoon player right now. And for what it's worth too, last year, he was very successful against lefties in a super small sample. It was like sub 70 plate appearances, but he was awesome somehow against lefties last season. I don't know what the heck happened, but if that was like signs of improvement and now he's serviceable against lefties and dynamite against righties, particularly at home, I do think there's value there. The tough part with the trade deadline is convincing other managers that not only, you know, is JJ Blade worth trading for, but he's actually going to continue this success into yeah. future seasons. That's the tricky part. So if he gets traded at the deadline, I would be trying to move him before Cincinnati moves him. but I haven't heard any JJ Blade rumors. I only say that because you hinted at it, like if he is traded, but does he seem like a guy that they would move?
I mean, I would think so only for the same reason that people would trade him in a fantasy league, right? Like they also have to be, you know, debating how real this is, how sustainable it is. The team is not like, you know, 52 and 58, they'd be like in first place in the AL, disaster of a league right now. But they are, you know, 17 games out in the Central and 5.5 games back in the wild card. And 5.5 isn't like so crazy, but there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams they'd have to pass. Like they should be sellers. And if you look at what they have to sell, Blade makes some sense, right? He's found money for them more or less. And so if they can turn him into something interesting, I don't know why they wouldn't at least entertain that. But I also think, like to your point about the splits, I mean, here let me make the case for, I guess for both the Reds and for my team to keep JJ Bleda, but also for the case for someone to pick him up. So as long as he's in Cincinnati, and obviously we will know more, you know, by the time people are listening to this, we'll know more because the deadline will potentially have passed. He is right now his, so you mentioned his home splits versus right-handed pitchers. And his home split versus right-handed pitcher, like I said, 150 WRC plus. His home split versus left-handed pitchers is a 115 WRC plus. So you can start him every single day at home. His away split versus lefties, let's mention this, is a 60 WRC plus. You have to bench him on the road against lefties. But his away split against righties is, I believe, a 98. Yeah, it's a 98. 98 isn't great, but there's a couple of things that are worth noting with a 98. One is 98 means against a bad starting pitcher, you can still use him. He's as likely as anyone to have a good day against a bad starting pitcher. He also has a 244 BABIP on the road against righties, which is a pretty random number. He's got a 233 BABIP overall. Now, he is a low-ish BABIP hitter. He's got a 250 for his career, but like that 233 and that 250 both feel, or 244 against righties on the road. Like, I think there's some upside in that 98 WRC plus on the road against righties. I don't think he's going to become a star against them, but this is a guy who you can start against every righty and in every home game. And that covers most of the season. And especially in a format like Auto New or anything else where you have, like, you know, plenty of roster depth, you bench him when he faces lefties on the road. Otherwise, you keep him in the lineup. And yeah, I think that's a pretty valuable piece at a low price. The other thing I will say is a case for him. Coming into this season, he had a career WOBA of 307. His career high WOBA was in 2024 with Oakland when he had a 330 across 642 plate appearances. This year, he has a 349. Obviously, a career high, outlier from what it looks like. 350. He has raised his career WOBA from 307 all the way to 315 this year. If you look at the projections on his Fangraphs player page, Steamer says 334 going forward. Zip says 335. ATC says 338. The Bat says 338. The Bat X is 344. The low man is 331. So everybody is calling for some amount of regression, but all of that regression is calling for him to regress to something better than he has ever been before this season, which is to say the projections are all buying in. And projections are always slow to buy in on a breakout, right? Because we can look at a breakout and say, like, hey, we see a swing change, we see this, we see that, and decide to take a risk on a guy. The projections are going to heavily regress any breakout for a long time until they really get comfortable with the statistical change. They're already there with him. And I don't blame the projections, because if you just look at his last three seasons, right, going back to that breakout in 2024, and then obviously had a down year again last year, but he has a 328 WOBA since the start of 2024. That's a 320 OBP, a 436 slugging with 53 home runs in 1330 plate appearances. I mean, that's a guy in a 4x4 league. That's an acceptable OBP with 25 home run power, and scoring a lot of runs, like doing all the things you want to see. He is not a star. Right. This is not a guy, like, if, you know, we fast forward 6 months and we're getting ready for auction season and he's a free agent, I'm not telling you to spend $30 on this guy. But he is now, two of the last three seasons, and based on the projections moving forward, an established, solid, very good, you can start him every game outfielder. And that's, I guess, you should start him every game except against lefties on the road. Outfielder. And that's valuable. And that's why I was willing to trade Muncy for him. And it's frustrating to me that, like, I can't now get even lesser value. Like, Okamoto is not as good as Muncy. And they're the same. They're both $20 in this league, and I don't think either of them are keepers. And it's sort of frustrating me that now I can't even like get back to a meh third baseman for him. So this may be a case where the right answer is like, I just have to keep him. Like, I'm seeing all this. I'm high on him. I feel good about where he's headed. And I can't. It's maybe a good, you know, trade lesson, right? It's like, you can't convince people to see the things you see. You can tell them what you see, right? You can explain why you're into a guy, but you can't convince somebody to see what you see.
Especially when you're trying to trade them away, because it's just going to be like, all right, buddy, you know, kick rocks. I think part of it too, Chad, is like, third base is so, so bad that folks might be looking at the replacement value and just being like, even if I like Blade, you know, what's my third base situation going to be if I trade away even my mediocre third baseman for this guy? Not that outfield's deep, but still.
Do you think I should be shopping Josh Jung with him or instead of him? I mean, Jung is the guy I was counting on coming back, but it sounds like he's not back anytime soon. And he's a similar case where, like, real prospect pedigree, has had good seasons in the past. His was 2023 versus Blade's 2024. Is having an excellent season this year. 361 OBP, 441 slug, you know, 9 home runs in what's basically a little over half a season. So he's not quite the 25 home run guy, but better rates and at a third base, a tougher position. I sort of saw him as a guy like, I want to keep this guy. I want him to be my third baseman long term, but maybe I need to be shopping him. They're both 28, similar cases, actually.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's, I really like what Josh Jung was doing this year because plate discipline had been such an issue, but out of nowhere, you know, the sub 20 strikeout, I mean, sub 18% strikeout rate, and then the walk rate is a career high. We're getting into like MLB average territory for the walk rate, which allowed with coinciding with the breakout, we're talking about an OBP over 360. So I do like Jung. He is a little bit, I want to look at the power that you acknowledge or lack thereof, right? 9 homers in about half of a season and be like, well, that's not good enough for a third baseman. I think in 2026, actually, that's probably fine. So I don't know. I mean, it like anything else, it would depend on the return, but I understand why you would prefer to shop JJ Blade before you would shop Josh Jung. If for any other reason, then it's just such a premium position right now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other piece of this again is that my infield is thin. And so if and when Jung comes back, I really need him. Whereas, like, looking at my lineup right now, if I set my lineup for today and I'm trying to figure out who I want to start in the outfield, Blade is at home against Mitch Keller. He should probably be in my lineup. But putting him in the lineup means benching at least two of Brian Reynolds in Cincinnati against Chase Burns, but still Brian Reynolds in Cincinnati, Wyatt Langford against Peter Lambert, Cole Carrig at home in Colorado against Seth Lugo, Chase DeLauder against Merrill Kelly, Esmerlin Valdez in Cincinnati, or Kyle Stowers against Robert Stock.
Robert Stock, former Boston Red Sox there. How about that?
There you go. But I mean, you like, listen to that list and like, who are the two guys to bench? And like, part of me feels like Blade is one of the guys to bench because Keller can sometimes spin a gem. And like, I am not, you know, maybe the answer is Trevor Larnach. Like, he's in Seattle. It's not a good power park, although there's been home runs flying out there recently. He's facing George Kirby, who I still think is a good pitcher, although sometimes the stats
last show it.
Yeah. Do I sit Brian Reynolds because Chase Burns is a tougher opponent than Keller, even though they're both like, even though Reynolds is the better hitter and they're both in Cincinnati? Do I sit Esmerlin Valdez because he's less established? I don't think I can sit him. I don't know who to sit.
Yeah, that's an almost impossible situation. There's no way I'm benching Brian Reynolds, but it's kind of besides the point.
Yeah, but then that gets me to, well, if Blade, even in this good matchup, is maybe my sixth or seventh best outfielder, it's not his fault, but he becomes a trade asset. And then don't know. Then the question, of course, becomes like, if nobody's going to trade for him, do I instead have to shop like Valdez or DeLauder or Keurig or Larnach or my other cheap outfielders? And like, I don't know. I don't know if anyone's going to buy one of those. Like, they will buy those guys, but like, I don't really want to trade DeLauder or Valdez or Keurig for that matter. And Larnach is probably less enticing to people. I just don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we got some other bats to talk about. Be right back after this. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Mentioned we got some other bats to talk about. And this, Pete, this is a question from you. And so why don't you set up this comparison of corner bats?
Sure. Yeah. So if I told you that on August 2nd, Bryce Eldridge would have almost double the amount of homers as Vlad Guerrero Jr., I don't know how I would read that. I would interpret that as one of two things. One would be that Vlad must have got hurt, or the second would be that Bryce Eldridge is just having this monster breakout. And really, neither of those things are true. I mean, Eldridge has been really good. I wouldn't call it a monster breakout. I would say he's been a pleasant surprise, just because so many prospects, particularly ones that struggle with strikeouts when they debut, you know, we tend to get a little disappointed at first, and it creates good buy low opportunities. Bryce Eldridge is striking out quite a bit. I believe that strikeout rate is up over 26%. Yeah, he's at 27% on the season. I know he's gotten a little bit colder lately, but I don't think there's any disputing that he is essentially, is it aggressive to say far outproduced Vlad Guerrero Jr.? I mean, it might be based on just pure volume, but like, I don't know. I feel more comfortable most nights with Bryce Eldridge in my lineup than Vlad Guerrero Jr. I am really concerned about the power. Vlad is, this is like year 800 of worrying about his launch angle concerns, whereas Eldridge seems to be, even in a tough hitter's park, adjusting really well. Average exit velocity over 92 miles an hour. You know, the barrel rate is 12.4%. Like, he is basically, at just 21 years old, doing everything that we would hope he would do in his debut, despite the sub 800 OPS. So my question is essentially, in keeper leagues, like, regardless of price, would you rather have Bryce Eldridge than Vlad Guerrero Jr.? And I'll add to my preface of this with, in League 13, I had a $1 Bryce Eldridge, and like, this was when he was really hitting the crap out of the ball. I'm like, I got to get this guy in my lineup. So I traded Vlad Guerrero Jr., who, like, I think has a little bit of increased value in Fangraphs points leagues, for, I think it was a $23 Dylan Cease. Now, obviously, Cease has pitched great, so like, yay, that trade looks wonderful. But I almost feel like, taking Cease out of that, I feel like I upgraded at first base going from Vlad to Bryce Eldridge, which feels crazy to me. So where are you at with Eldridge versus Vlad? And like, should Vlad managers be gravely concerned about how the season has gone? Zero home runs at home on the season. It is August 2nd. Wild.
Yeah. August 2nd. So start with a couple things. I jumped into the Fangraphs auction calculator and used there's the experimental setting on the auction calculator, which allows it to basically backfill for missed time, right? It's looking at, you know, given you can replace a guy in your lineup, what's his value to you been? And that right now tells me that year to date, Bryce Eldridge, in a sort of standard Yahoo 5x5 shallow league setting, has been negative value.
Wow.
Now, and Vlad, meanwhile, has been slightly positive value. $1. So barely, right? And I was trying to figure out why that is, and I think there are two reasons for it. One is the counting stats are still, other than home runs, the counting stats are still better, right? Vlad has... Let's look at this. Vlad's got 57 runs and 44 RBIs. That's 35 versus 35 and 26 for Eldridge. And so when you add replacement level to Eldridge, you're just still not quite getting to Vlad there. The average, we got a 253 for Eldridge and a 267 for Vlad. That's not a huge gap, but it's a gap that for most leagues goes from not hurting you to actively helping you at least a small amount. And so that makes a big difference in their value. And the other thing is the area where we all knew that Vlad would outproduce other first basemen, he has 7 stolen bases on the year. So that, you know, Eldridge has 1. And like that in a 5x5 league, that really will move the needle. Now, if I switch this to, let's say, AutoNew Fangraphs points, and look at their relative values there. And I'm going to do that right now because I haven't done it yet. So I'm guessing it's going to be different, is my answer. Eldridge is -$2 there, just barely negative. Vlad, oh, sorry, hold on. I think this is using the wrong. Nope, ignore that -$2 because it reverted to using projections, which is going to favor Vlad and not favor Eldridge. So give this 1 second. There we go. It has Vlad at, sorry, I was telling Pete before I started recording, my computer is, the computer I use to look stuff up while we're recording is not a good computer. It has a $2.30 Vlad Guerrero Jr. and a $5.70 Bryce Eldridge. So when you take the stolen bases out of it, when you get a little bit less worried about the volume, when you look more at a points basis or something like that, Eldridge is outperforming Vlad. It's not by a ton, but he is outperforming Vlad. The fact that it's not by a ton and the fact that Vlad is still young and that if you go under the hood, like if you just look at XWOBA, right? XWOBA for Eldridge is very good, right? He has a 348 WOBA. His ex-WOBA is 356. So it's not like he's way underperforming his ex-WOBA. Like he's basically in line. He's a 350-ish WOBA kind of guy. Vlad has a 344 ex-WOBA. It's a 312 WOBA, but it's a 344 ex-WOBA. So their ex-WOBAs this year are not far apart from each other. And this is with Vlad being basically as bad as he's ever been. So if you look at Eldridge and you're like, man, he's doing really well. This is a good season for him. And like, he's still hitting that park in the future. Like one of the reasons I'm looking at WOBA for fantasy instead of WRC plus in this case is that WRC plus will suppress a guy's value for a good park and inflate it for a bad park, right? Like Eldridge will look better by WRC plus than he does by WOBA because of the park factors. But I don't want that. Like he's going to be in San Francisco. He's not leaving that park. So WOBA is a better measure. And same for Vlad. He's going to be in the park he's in. I don't know. If you told me that Eldridge is going to keep doing what he's doing, he's going to do the same thing for the next 5 years, I'd be like, yeah, that seems pretty good. Projections have him dropping to a WOBA closer to 320. The low man on him is oopsie at 309. That feels like an outlier low. The second lowest is 318 from ATC. The highest is 326 from the bat. The bat X is at 319 if you care about the bat versus the bat X. So 348 is a good season for him. It's better than what the projections tell us to expect. And, you know, he's going to have to make some adjustments as the league adjusts to him and all that stuff. Like all that stuff is coming for him. Vlad, I understand that this year he's at a 312. That anywhere in that 320 to 340 range, that is sort of, from, you know, the high end of that range being where Eldridge is right now, the low end of that range being where projections think Eldridge is going to be, any of those is a bad outcome for Vlad moving forward. And I am not super inclined to look at Vlad's season and say, yeah, this is who he is now. His exit velocity is down. His hard hit rate is down. His barrel rate is down. His max EV is going to be a weird thing to say. It's going to be a career low max EV. That's a weird thing to say only because like it's not like 116 is the slowest he's ever hit a ball. It's just the slowest he's ever hit a ball to be his fastest ball of a season. Even his 344 ex-WOBA is almost a career low. His first 2 years when he was a child were 333 and 338. But like, his bat speed is fine. His fast swing rate is down a bit, but it's fine. I don't know what's going on with him. There's a couple of possibilities here. One is that there's an injury that that's causing some sort of issue, that it's not impacting his ability to swing hard, but it's impacting his ability to swing the way he wants to swing. The other is like, maybe he is maybe he's just not going to be good anymore. There's also a possibility that what's happening right now is like I said, his hard hit rate and stuff, like it's down, but it's not crazy. He has a 5.5% home run per fall rate. There's a possibility that he's just getting unlucky. Like this is the things just aren't sort of falling his way. And it's a little like, it can be a little dismissive to be like, well, he's just getting unlucky this year. But like that happens. Guys have years where like the ball just doesn't travel out for some reason. And there's no good explanation for why. And it just happens sometimes. And if you told me that, you know, you're asking me right now, what do I expect from Vlad going forward? I think he's just going to go back to being the guy he's been. Like, that may not be the 48 home run, 419 WOBA season we saw from him in 2021. It may not even be the 398 WOBA 30 home run season he had 2 years ago. But like last year, he had 23 home runs, 6 WOBA. I think he goes back to that kind of stuff. Like that's, I think he just is the guy he's been. I think this is just, the 419 in 2021 probably wasn't real. At the time, he was 22 years old, and it felt like it might be a breakout, and that's who he's going to be. In retrospect, it's probably not. Right now, this feels like, oh my God, is this who Vlad is? No, I don't think so. I think he's just going to be the guy he's been. I think this is just 2021 was the upside, 2026 is the downside, and everything else is sort of where you can expect him to be going forward. And so, regardless of price, no, I do not want Eldridge over Vlad.
I think that all makes sense. I think just from a roster construction standpoint is where like I think Vlad presents some challenges. So like you have to remove price because he was a first round, second round pick, probably closer to a second round pick this year. And a lot of that was driven by the fact that like, yes, his power has been disappointing. And it just has been like two of the last three seasons, he's needed almost 700 plate appearances to reach 26 and 23 home runs. I mean, that's a disappointment. And yet he had that monster power breakout in the postseason last year. And I think people thought like, okay, he's going to finally start hitting for power. From a roster construction standpoint, because he hasn't, and because so many first basemen are just having outstanding seasons. I mean, it is a great year for first base, particularly for first base power. If you're taking Vlad, even if, and you're not going to have to pay a first or second round pick next year, but if Vlad is your first baseman, you really have to get your power elsewhere. Whereas a guy like Eldridge doing this in just his age 21 season, not that Vlad's old, but I am kind like that has to be a part of the equation. This is supposed to be his prime year. He's 27. It's his age 27 season, and he's got 6 bombs on August 2nd. And I do think definitely some bad luck is sprinkled in there. It has to be. It just has to be. But if Eldridge is a guy who like right now, like taking his bumps and playing in a bad park, and you're right, that's not going to change. Pacing to be like a 25 to 30 homer guy, I don't know. I feel like you kind of need that out of your first baseman in 2026. And obviously you can construct your roster in many different ways, but you're going to have to make some weird adjustments if Vlad really isn't going to be a power hitter and he's going to be your first baseman.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that is like, that's probably enough reason not to take him in the first round next year. Right.
Oh my
and he's
God.
Not going to go
God
in the first
bless
round.
If anybody does that.
Right. Like I get what you're saying. I think he's going to hit 25 to 30 home runs. He's going to do it over, like you said, 600 or seven, almost 700 plate appearances. Like he's not going to be a guy who hits 25 home runs and 550 plate appearances. And you're like, oh man, imagine if he got a full season. Like, but I think he's going to go back to sort of being what he's been.
Sure.
And yeah, it is. It has been a great season for first baseman. I don't know. I mean, Eldridge has 11 home runs and 283 plate appearances this year. That paces out to what, 25-ish over a full season of plate appearances?
Yeah.
And if you look at what projections are for him going forward, they're right around that same point, seven-ish more home runs this year over about 180 plate appearances, which again gets you to right that 20, it's over a full 600 plate appearance season, it gets you to 25-ish home runs. I don't think they're going to be that different. And I think what you are going to get is, I think moving forward, right now, the batting average difference, like I said, is about 14 points. I would bet on that being double that next year, maybe more, right? And if you look at the projections for Vlad are all for batting averages in the 284 to 290 range. The highest one is 297 from Oopsie. The lowest is 284 from Zips. He's a 286 career hitter. Eldridge is a 238 career hitter. That includes, you know, his 37 plate appearances last year. He's a 253 this year. Projections are all around 230 to 240. 232 at the low end, 241 at the high end. I think a 30-point gap in their batting averages next year, when I said it was going to double, like that's around a 30-point gap, that is probably a low end. Like that's a conservative estimate of how big the gap between them will be. I don't think that makes up for the handful, maybe. Like let's give Eldridge five, let's call Eldridge a 30 home run hitter, which I don't think he is. And let's say Vlad gets stuck at 23. A potential 40-point, 50-point batting average gap. And on top of that, I joked about Vlad's seven steals this year. He stole six last year. He only had a couple in 2024. But over the last 5 years, he has 8, 5, 2, 6, and 7. And Eldridge, he stole six across three levels in 2024. He stole one across multiple levels in 2025, and he has one
steal.
He's
not going to run.
Not going to run.
He's a moose.
And then, so you're talking about, you know, five or six extra steals as opposed to five or six extra home runs, 40 points in batting average. And then whose offense is going to be better? I know the Jays offense is terrible this year. Who are you going to count on for more runs and RBIs next year between Vlad?
I just always assume the Giants are going to have a bottom five offense in baseball, like regardless of, like, I don't. You could put the NL All Star team as their lineup, and somehow they would hit 240 as a team. Like Giants. No.
So this all the like, and I think this is true in you know, we've been talking mostly 5x5. If I look at Fangraphs points, if I look at 4x4, I look at OBP leagues, like none of that changes this for me. Like no, if I'm leaving price out of it, I'm taking Vlad. When you add price into it, like if I'm looking at an auto new league right now and I have a choice for next season between keeping a $5 Eldridge, I don't even know what his average value is, its price is probably somewhere around there, versus whatever it is it costs to keep Vlad. Let's see if I can look this up real quick.
While you're looking it up, I assume Vlad is going to be cut everywhere. I mean, how can you keep a first baseman over $30 who's not even going to hit? Like, is he even going to hit in the teens for home runs?
So the median on Eldridge is $5. It's $48 on Vlad.
Oh yeah, that's a no-brainer.
100%. That, like, so when you include their costs, and if you look at like a standard keeper league where you have like a round cost, like I'm not going to pull up our Fantrax leagues right now, our listener leagues right now, but in those leagues where it's a 1 to 2 round price increase, Vlad's going to be back in the draft everywhere, and Eldridge is a clear keeper everywhere. So from that perspective, like, if you're selling and you could somehow trade Vlad for Eldridge, I would trade Vlad plus, like, if a team with Eldridge is trying to buy for the stretch run and they are saying, like, hey, I need an outfielder and I'm willing to trade Eldridge, I would trade a top outfielder who's a cut with Vlad to get Eldridge and just say, hey, Here's Vlad to replace what you were getting from Eldridge. He'll probably, like, I still think if you're betting on the next 8 weeks, which of these guys is going to be better over the next 8 weeks, I'd bet on Vlad. I know this year's been terrible. I understand that might be, like, that's going against the grain of what's happened, but he's the better player. He just is. And, like, so yes, I would make, but I still would make that trade and be like, hey, Vlad, replace what you're getting from Eldridge. You're also going to get the upside from this other outfielder I'm trading you. And then you've got a better keeper for next year, for sure. Give me Eldridge plus $43 to spend. But your question was without accounting for cost. Not accounting for cost. I think it's Vlad, and I don't think it's that close.
Yeah, if the power going forward is close, there's no question that it's Vlad. I think the hope is if you're taking Eldridge, that you think Eldridge has like 40 homer upside, and that Vlad maybe is better than what he's been this year, but he's a guy who's going to hit in the teens. And that's just not who he's been for his career. So I think I tend to agree with you. But the fact that it's even a conversation, I think, bodes well for people rostering Bryce Eldridge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is not to knock Eldridge at all, right? Like, I think there is a lot of room for a guy to not be Vlad Guerrero Jr. and still be a very, very good baseball player. So I think that is true. Let's take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about a couple more players. We're moving more slowly than I thought, people. We'll get warmed up. Yeah. All right, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Really talked about a few players so far, and we're going to talk about, we talked about Vlad being a guy who is disappointing this year. Let's talk about a guy who was disappointing, is disappointing. I don't know how you want to phrase this one, Pete, but I have been trying to figure out how to acquire Fernando Tatis Jr. Actually, going right back to that same league I was talking about, but in a couple other places as well, in part because that second base eligibility and like in that, that League One, I was telling you, I'm a mess in the infield right now. Tatis, career 362 WOBA. We know, we don't need to go over his entire career, but this is a guy who, when he's fully healthy, has had, 40 home run seasons. He's basically been a lock for 25-ish home runs if you give him 600 plus plate appearances. Like I said, 362 career WOBA. This year, the WOBA is 331. He has 8 home runs. That 8 is pretty incredible compared to Vlad's 6, especially when you remember that we were into when did he hit his first home run? It was really late. Like, there was a long time where people were like, is Tatis ever going to hit a home run?
Right.
So what's been an overall disappointing season for Tatis, and he actually he's now gone another couple weeks without a home run. I don't know if that's actually anything to worry about, but if you go back to just the second half of the season, he's got a 173 WRC plus, a 423 WOBA, 445 X WOBA. He only has 3 home runs in the second half. That's in 71 plate appearances though. So that's it's not quite a 30 home run pace, but it's a 25 home run pace. Like, it's back where we expect him to be. And so it sort of feels like Tatis is back to being the guy we expect him to be. The problem is, and it's a little bit like the case with Vlad, if I look at his cost, his median salary is $51. And even if he's sort of back to what we expected him to be, I don't know that I think he's a $50 player, even with second base eligibility where he has it. And so it seems to me he should be on the trade block in most places because of that. But what's a fair return for him given a disappointing overall season, but maybe doing exactly what we'd expect him to do moving forward?
Yeah, I think I'd simplify it. Where he's clearly going to be a cut at 50 plus bucks. I'm still I've kind of been the Tatis guy on this podcast. I still am. I still really like Fernando Tatis Jr. I'd kind of view him like how you were just viewing Vlad. Yes, he's underperformed his stuff so far. And with Fernando Tatis Jr., actually kind of similar to Vlad, he's someone who does kind of underproduce compared to his expected statistics anyway, but to this degree feels pretty drastic. I still think he's an elite player. I would probably, if I did my rankings without looking at anything, I would assume he'd still be a late second round, early third round pick for me. I wouldn't feel comfortable letting him slide anymore. It's nice that he has the second base eligibility, but second base has actually been okay this year. So I don't think you need to factor that in too much, but I would simplify it to being simply, he's a player who is a cut, but he's an elite talent. So if you can get you should be able to get something keeper worthy for him. And I think that kind of swap would be fine. So just for the lazy take would be the guy we just talked about. If I could get a $5 Bryce Eldridge for my $52 Fernando Tatis Jr., I think that kind of works out for everybody. Assuming you have a suitable first baseman replacement. But that's ultimately what you're looking for. If you have a player you're going to cut, you got to get something keepable. If you want to bring in a great talent, you're going to have to give up something that's keepable. And in either scenario, I'd be comfortable with that. If I'm trying to contend and I can give up a Bryce Eldridge for Fernando Tatis Jr., I'm doing that. If I'm selling, I'm going to get something keepable for Tatis. Sounds great, despite the disappointing season.
Yeah. So you mentioned Eldridge as a fit there. It sounds like, and I know I said you've been the high man on Tatis for the most part. Bleday probably not enough. Is like something like Bleday plus DeVries, Bleday plus Emerson Hancock, is that moving the needle for you in a 4x4?
If I'm selling and I can get DeVries and Bleday, scenarios like this are always tough, right? Because you're going to shop around, and could I get an offer that could beat that? Probably. But I have not been able to keep up with the minor leagues. I don't feel like Leo DeVries has lost a lot of prospect value, has he? I know he moved out, like on pipeline, he was 2 and now he's like 9 or something like that. But is he having some disaster season? Because if he's not, I would give up Tatis for, if I'm not going to keep Tatis and I can get a top 10 prospect in baseball with Bleday, like, I'd do that trade.
Yeah, he moved down to number 6 on the board at Fangraphs. He is still a 60 future value. And when you look at like overall prospect ratings there, Jesus Mate is a 65. There's no one else over 60. The 60 future value prospects are Franklin Arias, Cade Anderson, Walker Jenkins, Max Clark, DeVries, Eli Willits, Seth Hernandez, and Thomas White. DeVries is like, I think if you look at the surface stats, it's like a 378 OBP, which is not always the first thing people look at, but that's obviously a very good OBP, but like only a 459 slugging, 13 home runs in half a season. Like it's not great, but it's not terrible. He has 33 stolen bases. So in 5x5 leagues, people are, I'm sure, noticing that. But that all adds up to a 115 WRC plus, so 15% better than league average as a 19-year-old,
right,
in AA. And he's not, this isn't 19 like he turned 20 a month ago, but this is age 19. He doesn't turn 20 until October. Like he is a child playing against these guys. It's not a disaster season. It's maybe not the best season you could have possibly hoped for him. And if you look at his WRC plus by year, like last year across multiple levels, he had a 125. In 2024, it was a 116, but he was an A ball as a 17-year-old. So I guess you could argue it's down a little bit, but man, everything looks really good with DeVries.
Yeah, I don't, based on all of that and looking at his AA numbers, I don't think he's lost value. Now, my opinion doesn't matter, right?
Like, right.
Prospect evaluators and scouts and Major League Baseball teams will decide that. But as a 19-year-old at AA the whole year, and he's doing this, well, like, where's the issue, I guess, would be my question. So, yes, I would absolutely purchase a Fernando Tatis Jr. for those two players if I was trying to contend. But I would also gladly accept a cheap Bleday and a cheap DeVries for a player that I'm not going to keep. I don't really see. I think that would actually be a tough offer to beat for those other contending teams that are trying to beat Tatis.
Yeah. While we're talking about DeVries, we're going to talk later. One of the last questions that we're going to cover today, sort of a combined question, was I was curious about your thoughts on Cade Anderson. You were asking, who's a guy that in your keeper leagues, if you're selling, that you're targeting right now. Anderson kind of is that guy for me. I think there have been multiple prospect lists that have come out recently with him as the number one overall prospect in baseball. Pitchers don't get to be the number one overall prospect in baseball. They used to, and now we're all aware that pitchers break and stuff like that, which means to be the number one overall prospect as a pitcher, what the person making that list or the stats making that list or whatever it is making that list is saying, like, not only is this guy better than all the hitters, but he's so much better than all the hitters that the fact that he's more risky doesn't dampen my enthusiasm. And so I'm going to add that to me is like, he is a target for me everywhere. My question for you around this is, we talked a little bit about DeVries. We talked now a bit about Cade Anderson. Who are the prospects you're targeting in keeper leagues? If you're making trades now, not talking in the off season, but like right now you're selling, are there prospects that you're like, this is a guy that I think can impact my team? And I know you're like me, like if you're selling now, you're not looking at, I don't know, Von Lackey, for example, who I think is about the highest rated prospect, especially for fantasy in from this year's draft. Like, he might move quickly. He, you know, we'll see, but he's in A ball and we don't know much. Like, you, like me, are less likely to target a guy like that because you want guys who you are confident are going to help you in the near term. But who are the prospects you're like, yeah, this is the guy I want to go after?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question just because I'm not as much of a prospect guru, but I would say, like, the odds have to be pretty good that Josue DePaula is going to get traded, right? Like, the Dodgers just seem to trade away everybody, and he's the type of player who I assume once he got traded, sort of like what I expect to see eventually with Zaire Hope, although he's 2 years younger, I think, that when he does get traded, it's going to immediately result in play time. So he may be somebody who, like, appears to be blocked at the moment and might not even be long term. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he's up with the Dodgers next year anyway, but I do think there's a chance that things open up for him pretty quickly. He's having a monster season at Double A. He's been a great prospect for a while. He's steadily climbed the rankings. Pipeline right now has him at number 4. And I just kind of feel like the other guys, other than Cade Anderson, who's 22 years old, just seem a little bit further away. And I'm less inclined to go with pitcher prospects. I think Cade is definitely one of those, like, can't miss guys, right? Like you were saying, it's rare number one prospect as a starting pitcher. Cade feels like a Paul Skeens, Steven Strasburg type, where, like, they just at every level, they just dominate until they get to the major leagues and then they just dominate there. So he's can't miss, but otherwise I have a hard time with starting pitchers. I guess my answer would be Josue DePaula. And, like, how do you bet against the Dodgers anyway? It just feels like everything kind of goes their way, so why wouldn't he as well?
Yeah, I think the thing that's going to give me pause with DePaula is, this is just me guessing, I suspect that they value him over Zaire Hope. And I only say that because he seems to be higher rated in most places, and they just traded for Tarek Skubal and traded Hope and not DePaula. And if that's the case, if they value him more highly than Hope, then what's the trade? Like, they just traded Hope along with others, obviously, for Skubal. What's the trade they're going to make that's going to get them to give up something they value more highly than that? And so I'm a little concerned that they're going to keep him, which is, on the one hand, like, if they value him that high, like, if the Dodgers value him that highly, I should too, is part of my thinking. But as bad as he's been, Kyle Tucker's not going anywhere. Teoscar Hernandez, I believe, is still under contract. They have Andy Páez. They're going to continue to make room for Tommy Edman. They have James Tibbs in AAA. Like, it's not super clear where there is room for DePaula anytime soon. And if I look at I haven't looked at the free agent class for this coming offseason. Let's pull it up right now and see if there's anyone interesting. But as I'm looking at, you know, the Dodgers in general, and I think about the free agent, like, I think about what they're going to do for next year. It's like, not only do they have a bunch of guys under contract, but if there's a free agent they want, they're just going to go get them. Now, there aren't a ton of super obvious outfield candidates here, I don't think. Technically, Ronald Acuna Jr. could be a free agent if Atlanta buys him out for $10 million instead of paying him $17 million. I'm going to expect them to pick up that option. Seems pretty likely. And that's kind of it. Like, the best outfielders out there, Randy Arozarena is a free agent. They could go after Arozarena. He wouldn't be a crazy fit for them. That might be it. I don't know. So I don't think they're going to add much, and maybe that's why they haven't. Maybe that's why they're holding DePaula and Tibbs, and like maybe they are counting on one of those guys to be a guy for them. But I don't know. I have a little bit of hesitation that the Dodgers are going to give him a real shot, and a little bit of hesitation they're going to trade him, and that makes him a harder fit for me.
Do you think I should be valuing the younger guys maybe a little bit more, just because if we get nothing out of any of these guys next year, then, like, maybe I should kind of assume that they're going to, that, like, if there's no season next year, which,
yeah,
I'm not saying is going to happen, but it's starting to feel a little bit more and more like a possibility. Then, like, should I be treating a 19-year-old like he's 20 and a 20-year-old like he's 21? So should I not really factor in how close DePaula feels compared to those other guys, despite the major league team's roster construction? Or is it better to just assume, like, well, that's a lost year of stats anyway, so you shouldn't look at it that way?
It shouldn't be a lost year of stats, though, because
different.
I could be wrong about this, but the minor leagues, they're not under the CBA, so they should still play. And so from that perspective, I mean, I guess what the real question here is, should you be considering a 2028 and a 2027 ETA to be the same?
Right. Yeah. That's basically right.
That's a good question.
That changes things drastically. Like I prefer Made and Arias and a handful of others probably.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I still don't think we're going to lose as much of next season as people, as sort of the doomsday scenarios.
Oh, that's,
and I know there was like
keeper cut, raising the spirits.
I just, here's the thing. Like, I know like there was an owner recently who was quoted as, or like, you know, saying that they expect to lose the season or whatever. I think we're seeing a lot of posturing right now from both sides. That's totally normal at this point in the process. I think both sides have so much to lose from a lost season that it's just not going to happen. They're going to find a way to get through this. And we maybe, you know, if you remember, what was it? It was 2022, the last time we went through this, right? And that season, the lockout dragged into spring training. Spring training got a delayed start. They pushed back the start of the season by a week. And there's this whole, like, if we don't get a deal now, we miss the beginning of the season. And then you get a deal. And everyone's like, oh my God, we're going to miss the beginning of the season. Then there was like, well, this week we could get a deal and we'd still have time to play 162 games. And then it was like, okay, well, before we thought that we'd miss the beginning of spring training. And then we said we'd have to delay opening day. Or we could still be ready by opening day with a delayed spring training. Well, now we're going to have a delayed spring training and we can't make opening day, but we can compress the schedule. Like, they kept coming up with ways and they ended up playing a season. And I think we're going to see something similar this year. It's going to drag into spring training. I will say in 2022, it was my 40th birthday. My wife planned a trip to Arizona to go to spring training over my kids' midwinter break. We were going to be there for the first week of spring training and it didn't go well. We got there and there was no baseball. We hung out in Arizona. It was nice. If you are planning trips to spring training next year, plan them for the end of spring training, not the beginning. But I just don't think this is going to end up being worse than that. I could be wrong. I just think that I think what we're getting right now is posturing. And I think COVID is still too fresh in people's minds in terms of what that season cost everybody. I just don't think they're going to let it get there. And so for me, I think you're probably right that we should be discounting 2027 ETAs versus 2028 a little bit on the basis that I could be wrong, right? I mean, I could totally be wrong. And if I'm totally wrong, then yes, like, even if we get a half season, the chances of guys debuting probably goes down. There's also a bunch of other stuff going on right now that, like, you know, will the CBA include the compensation for bringing up a guy opening day and winning rookie of the year? Like, we don't know. And that's all going to impact stuff. So, like, there's a lot of reasons to be a little bit more skeptical of what's to come because we just don't know. But I'm still assuming there's going to be a season next year. I think it is very possible it's like 140 game season instead of 162. Like, I think that might happen. But I just don't think I think we're going to get enough of a season that it is not going to drastically impact player value for fantasy leagues, nor is it going to change the way I think people value their fantasy leagues themselves. Like 2020, there's definitely some like people who are like, yeah, I won my fantasy league in 2020. And you're like, yeah, does that really count? Like, I don't think we're going to get that kind of season, right? I think we're going to get a season that, like, you know, if we play 140 games and I win my fantasy leagues, that pennant is the same as any other.
Oh, that absolutely counts. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not a Mickey Mouse ring.
No. So when I'm looking at prospects, I am still looking at guys who I think are going to be up next year. And to me, the prospects that I am most interested in, targeting most closely for fantasy purposes, whether he gets traded or not, I think Franklin Arias is a starting shortstop for somebody at some point next year.
They better not trade him unless it's for CJ Abrams. So help me God.
I think if they do, it would be Abrams or maybe Zach Neto. Like, it's going to be, you're not a Neto fan.
Oh my. He's just a young Trevor Story. He has no plate discipline. Like what is he eating? 2/3. If they trade Franklin Arias for Zach Neto, man, I'm out. I'm finally out.
I don't know. I'm a Neto fan. I know it still is a 110 WRC plus, and that's in a down year where his home run per fly ball rate is lower than I think it will be going forward. I'm still a Neto fan, but I get it.
Like, but I think for the arguably the number one prospect in baseball, if what you're getting back is Zach Neto, I just, please God, no. Abrams though, my guy, hell yeah.
Yeah. The funny thing is, like, I'm just higher on Neto and lower on Abrams than you. And so, like, to me, that gap seems
closer.
Not that I wouldn't rather have Abrams. I'm like, okay. But yeah, Arias is a guy I'm targeting. I mentioned Anderson. I think Made is, I think there's a good chance we see Made next year. Walker Jenkins should be up next year. Max Clark is up now. So those are all guys I'm targeting. There's some others that I'm sort of interested in. I think, I've sort of gone up and down on Ethan Salas where, you know, what there was that point years ago. It feels like forever ago.
Is this guy 40 years old yet? Like, Jesus.
It feels like we've been talking about him forever. But there was that point, if you remember, the conversation about him was, it started in 2023. It was 17. Out of hand. He was moving quickly. Everyone was like, he's going to move so fast. And then he looked like a sort of a defense-only prospect for a while. And then he had injury issues. He struggled a bit in Double A, but it was brief. He only had 40 plate appearances in that was last year. He struggled a bit last year in Double A. This year, 300 plate appearances in Double A, a 111 WRC plus, 11% better than league average. That's really good for a catcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's been even better in Triple A, but it's only 15 plate appearances so far. He's only been up for like a week. He's still just 20. He turned 20 2 months ago. Like, the fact that he's performing well in AAA at age 20 as a catcher is wild. And so it's sort of crazy to me because the Ethan Salas story here, again, is like, as a 17-year-old, we're like, he can move fast. He's the future. This is incredible. Who knows when he might be up? And then it was like, okay, he's still a catcher. He's got a lot to learn. He's got these injuries. Maybe he's not going to move fast. And we're right back on the timeline of him being up. Like, I think he's up before he turns 21. He turns 21 next June. He's going to be up and the starting catcher for the Padres before his 21st birthday. And that is bonkers for a catcher.
That is. It's very impressive to be doing what he's doing, even at AAA as just a 20-year-old is really impressive. It was such a bad taste was put in my mouth though when he was 17, and like somebody in one of our new leagues had like a $5 17-year-old catcher and offered him for like one of my aces or something. ever since then, I was just like, get this guy out of my face with that. But yes, absolutely has the potential to be really impressive. One name I want to ask you about because you were really big on him. And then he's having an absolutely monster season at AAA is Joshua Baez. And what is Nathan Church so good that's why we haven't seen Joshua? Like, why is this guy not up? And are you still really high on him despite the 30% K rate?
I am still high on him. The 30% K rate is concerning. The bigger issue, and I'm trying to remember where I pulled this up, because I pulled this up before, and now I can't find it. His zone contact rate in AAA is, and I can't pull it up in front of me right now. I'm just going to describe it. It's abysmal. Low enough that he would have the lowest zone contact rate in the majors among qualified hitters.
Is he related to Javi Baez?
don't know. But Javi Baez had a different issue, right? Javi Baez could make contact. He just chased everything. Right? And this is the thing, is like, you can get away making a low amount of zone contact because you're swinging so hard if you're, you know, Kyle Schwarber. And maybe that's the direction Baez is headed, but he has to improve to be as bad at contact as a guy like Schwarber, right? Like, he's not there. And my read on this, and I'm not a prospect guy. I don't have sources. This is just me looking at numbers and making a guess and saying, if I were the Cardinals GM and I had Baez on my roster, and I weren't calling him up, and someone said, why aren't you calling him up? There are, I think, three possible answers here, and I'll get to the one I think is most likely last. One answer is, we're waiting until we can keep his rookie eligibility for next year for the prizes. We don't know if those prizes are going to exist next year. I don't think that's what it is. They are on the periphery of a playoff race, and if they thought he could make a difference, he'd be there. The other is, the trade deadline is tomorrow and they're still shopping guys like Church. That's possible. But again, if they thought he could make a difference, like, not having him up a month ago could be why they don't make the playoffs. The third reason that he's not up, and the one I think is probably the real reason, is that zone contact rate is bad enough that it's a fatal flaw in the majors right now, and they need to see him improve it before they're willing to just throw him in there. They don't think he's good enough to help yet. And he might be, you know, maybe he can overcome that. Maybe in a month we see him up, or in a couple of weeks we see him up, because they want to see, just, okay, let's see if it is in fact a fatal flaw. But I suspect that that's the risk, is that they think that there's a fatal flaw there that he can't overcome. And you know, the season that this calls to mind for me a little bit is Davison De Los Santos. What was it, 2 years ago, that Davison De Los Santos hit like 40 home runs in the minors, and everyone was like, when's he going to come up? Davis De Los Santos still hasn't had a major league impact because, you know, hitting, like, and that's where we are with Baez a little bit, is I think he is better than that. I have Baez on rosters. I like Baez. If I were selling, I'd be interested in picking up Baez, but it is worth keeping in mind that right now he has a very concerning flaw under the hood.
Yeah, I think that's, whenever we hear people clamoring about prospects and like accusing teams of like trying to bury them or not call them up for financial purposes, it feels like every time that happens, the player finally gets called up and they fall flat on their face and the team looks right. I'm not saying they were right, and I'm not even saying the accusations were unfounded, but that always seems to be the case. So when you factor in the strikeout rate, and I didn't know that about the zone contact rate, like, I totally get it, you know. And Church has been good, you know. It's not like he's been a bad player. He's been a good player.
Yeah. All right, Pete, we have been going for almost an hour and 15 minutes now, and it's I think it's about time we got through, you know, almost half our topic. So but hopefully we won't be waiting months to do this again. Hopefully we'll get another one in maybe later before next week, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
I leave for vacation next Monday, so we got to get it in before then so that we don't miss another couple weeks. But
we can do it.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you for bearing with us through this long break. And yeah, we'll be back with you to get you through trade season and get ready for the off season and all the other fun stuff that's coming.